may be working Monday night, and Tuesday might not be quite right. So come by Sunday, Sunday night I'm free.
Welcome to a new episode of Smashing Sundays with me, Lucy Pinder.
And me, Beth Granville.
We are very excited this week to have a guest who we've talked about getting on for ages, since we kind of fell in love with her in lockdown. We've got stand-up comedian, actress, writer, one of my favourite social media content creators. It's Miss Tiff Stevenson.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I'm in my book nook, so if you are looking at this, it's very messy behind me. So
I've read a lot of the books in your book nook, actually.
I've got some mad stuff in here. It really needs organising. I've got some puppets back there. I've got a gypsy and a witch.
Nice.
And I found them in a charity shop, which is one of my obsessions, which we will get into later on. But my great-grandfather was Romani. So I was like, oh, there's two depictions of me, gypsy and witch.
me and you, gypsy and witch.
We love a spell, don't we?
We do like a spell.
So there's puppets on there that I'm trying to work out how I can display them in a cool way, because they're all kids' ones. Who are they made by? I'll tell you the brand of them. Pelham puppets.
They were Pelham puppets
in the 50s and 60s. Yeah. So
I'm just so jealous of this setup. Like we were just saying, it looks so professional. You've got your mic, you've got your bookshelf, and me and Beth are like hovering over the laptop, sharing
headphones like 14-year-olds at the back of the bus.
Yeah,
listening to a Placebo tape.
I will say though that actually it just looks kind of nice and zen with the colour of your wall. I've got a blue wall on the other side of the room. So what you're on looks kind of like quite... And I'm just like mess. I've got too much stuff everywhere. In fact, there's a book here. This is beautifully ironic, if I can pull this out, called Mind Over Clutter.
And, nice.
I bought this book and then I couldn't find it for a year. So...
Like, yeah, is this part of the problem? Is this the bad guy? This is more clutter, isn't it? Like, how have they... Shit, I bought it now.
Shit.
Well, if you like being in charity shops, you can just take them back there. I love a charity shop.
Absolutely. I am obsessed with... I have been for a long time. If I'm in America, nothing satisfies me. Look, I love fashion. I love clothes. I love objet d'art. Nothing fascinates me more than getting something at a price that I feel like, yeah, I don't like paying full price for things. I'm like, I really don't want to pay full price for anything. But also charity shops I find fascinating, because there's great ones in LA, especially if you're in Hollywood, because people go to premieres or they get stuff and then they don't wear it.
And then it just goes
to like the Goodwill, or it goes to this place called Crossroads Trading, where you get awesome, like amazing. I had like basically a pair of brand new Philip Lim shoes that I bought from there, and I looked them up and I was like, oh, these are like £500 shoes, and I got them for like $50.
So
I love stuff like that, but charity shops are the ultimate, because I spend my life, I'm really intrigued by people, what motivates them, who they are. Like I used to do this writing exercise, so like, and actually I should start doing it again because I find it really interesting. So I would drive somewhere I hadn't been before. I'm super nosy. And I'll drive down a little residential street. And just from the outside of a house, I'm like, who lives in this house? And then I create a little story about the person that lives in the house. So, you know, are they on their own? Are they part of a couple? What do they do? Just on the, this is what the house looks like from the outside. And I start inventing little worlds. So I've always been obsessed with that. And charity shops for me are a portal into that, because you're like, who bought this? Why? I found this, actually my friend picked it up when we were in LA and we were in the Goodwill, and she bought it for me. It was a statue. There were like these statues, but they were really creepy, and it was like, it was either like old perverts or like old men need love too. It was like this really pervy.
Oh my God.
All the statues were so creepy. And she bought it for me. And then it's out. It's in America now. I don't have it back here. But I do find weird little things in charity shops. For example, this behind me here, this Fisher Price.
The candy man.
Yeah, if I don't set it off because it'll play forever, but it plays.
Oh, like a music box. I used to have one of those when I was little.
Did you?
Yes, I used to have one of those little music boxes. Oh my god, I haven't thought about
this. Tiff, have you been in a charity shop in Pinar? Have you picked that up in Pinar? Is that better?
Yeah, I want that back, actually.
This one, oh, so it says on the back, the candy man, who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew, cover it in chocolate.
Willy Wonka.
The Candyman. So this I got in, and I haven't even actually cleaned it.
It's a bit possessed, isn't it? It's slightly creepy.
I got it in New York in a yard sale, but it wasn't a yard sale. It was like a kind of like warehouse where people are just like a bric-a-brac, basically.
Yeah.
And I bought a bunch of old photos of people that I don't know. There was like a box of old photographs. So I just bought a bunch and I was like, maybe I'll go on Instagram and write the backstories of these people.
Oh my God.
Just off the basis. Yeah. So that I think is what draws me into, like, speaking of ideal things that I would do on a Sunday, if I can get into a charity shop and just mooch around and pick stuff up and go, who owned this? Why would you, you know, why would you ever buy this? And sometimes you find wonderful, beautiful things.
Mm.
And a lot of the time you find some tat or something completely mad that you're like, I don't know where this has come from. And then I'm intrigued to try and understand who owned this, who bought it here, who bought it. Is it a gift that someone went, I don't, what is this? Or is it someone kind of going, I've got this. And yeah, this was the thing. This was my true heart's desire. So I'm fascinated by other people's crap.
Other people's shit.
It's such a nice, like, I'm writing a TV sitcom at the moment, and I'm creating lots of new characters and going into so much like depth and finding different ways of like discovering who these people are. And each character's about 16 people rolled into one, right? And that's such a lovely like exercise, I think, for a writer to do, because what a nice sort of experiential activity to go and use those pieces that people have given away and like trace them back to when did they have it? Because, you know, so much story, well, all story starts from characters, right? And so, yeah, like, it's a character that drives a story, because if shit's happening and you don't care about the character and they're not realistic or well-drawn, or, you know, we're not interested in them, then who cares? Anything can happen. But sort of that thing of, like, yeah, just thinking about some of the naff things that are just still wrapped up, and, like, at what point, you know, like, the obvious kind of like, oh, it's Prosecco o'clock kind of plaque or whatever, you know, that somebody's bought. And you're like, who bought that to their house? And what was that? And how long did they keep it in their house before they took it to the charity shop? And, you know, who was the person? What was that event like?
Yeah.
Like, so it's such a lovely, like, just that I loved hearing that with what I'm doing at the moment in terms of another exercise to go, these characters, these worlds. And like you say, photos are fascinating.
God, that's freaked me out. I wonder if there are like photos of us that people have, like, well,
do you know what you used to do for a living? Oh my god, imagine there's any picture of you on the internet. Imagine you've got your tits out in some of them.
I mean, like, as children, like is there like a box in a charity shop somewhere of like us at an 8th birthday party?
Oh my god, probably.
Yeah.
These were all like old black and white photos. So I felt something about that felt like, because now you say that, it sounds like it could be a little bit creepy.
Yeah,
but
slightly.
Like, but in a good way. The ones that I have, there's something about them, because I think they're black and white photos. So they all look like New York. They were all like New York in the 50s, New York in the 60s. So it's like
so cool.
A kid in like Brooklyn drinking a soda pop. And then in the background, like some, you know, like, or a kid on a swing and like, and the mum there, or families, shots of families. That you're like, what is the dynamic here?
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to me, you know, of just because photos are so transient, they're just catching that moment. And that's the weird thing, isn't it, about, you know, photos living forever, but like whatever that moment is, if just that moment on someone's face where they're like, in this moment it was this mood, it was this feeling, what was that person thinking, what were they what was the dynamic between the people in the picture? You know, like a picture paints 1,000 words or whatever it is, you know. So just one of the, you know, the wife looking at the husband, like, you know, abjectly fucked off in one of them that I've got. And I'm like, what's going on there?
Those beautiful moments when it's so clear. Like, what's the really famous? Is it Sophia Loren? Like, the one where she's looking at her cleavage. You know, those moments where someone's just caught exactly. Like, my friend has one of her with her sister when she was a baby. And she's literally looking at her like she wants to kill her. And you're like, just that moment, they've absolutely got how you feel about
having a little sister.
Time.
So sorry, what? The attention is just being split now. Is there more attention or do I have to share mine? I hate this. that's great.
So are you a bit of a hoarder, Tiff?
I am. If I could be... like, I love the idea of being scandy and clean and everything else. It's just
it's a bit dull
happening.
Though, isn't it? It's a bit dull. Like, Auntie Claire's house. Like, I love my Auntie Claire's house because she's got like lovely artwork and little like interesting bits and bobs and interesting books. And I'm like, oh, that's what I want to create. Like, I want someone to walk into my house and be like, oh, I've got a real feel of what you like. Like,
my mum's house is the same, isn't it?
Yeah,
Maria's
sort of
character and stuff. And it's brilliant. And in my room at the moment, I've tried to keep it really minimalist and tried to really strip back. And it's a fucking nightmare. I haven't got anything. Like, I don't have any stuff. I haven't got any coats. I've tried to keep it all really clean. I'm like, right, it's great. I haven't got any books. Because I used to, like, you know, you pick up a book.
Yeah.
I've just like left a load of stuff at my parents' house and just, you know, like, I'm in a flat in London now. I'm like, do you know what? I'm not going to fill it with shit. Because last time I moved, I was like, what's all this? And now I'm like, I like looking through my stuff.
Yeah, mine's full of shit, but not stuff you want to look through. It's just full of like piles of clothes and cosmetics.
We'll get a couple of those little music boxes we have keep it by the bed. When we have one night stands over, put the music box on in the morning.
Imagine putting that music box on if you brought
I want to do it, actually.
There was an agreed tat shelf, and actually, do you know what? It's not too bad because I have my sideboard which has stuff in it, which has little bits and pieces, but I have an old G plan. Because I kind of like that mid-century furniture look, that mid-century modern. So it's like a G plan, like a 50s or 60s sideboard, which also has a drinks tray.
Nice.
That comes down, you can do your cocktails on and stuff.
Amazing.
Lovely
stuff.
So I have a few bits in there. But when we first put these shelves in that are behind me, we agreed that we would have the tat shelf, which was my request. Because when I travel, if I go away to do gigs or I'm doing an acting job or whatever, I want to have, like, I'll pick stuff up. Normally snow globes, because I've had that's a childhood obsession of mine. I'll come back to that. But yeah, so I've got like salt and pepper shakers, one as the 30 Rock bit, or the top of the Rockefeller building. And the other is Empire State Building, salt and pepper shakers.
Nice.
Love. Have they ever had salt or pepper in them?
No.
Just look at them.
Display.
Yeah.
On display.
Cracking stuff. That New York themed dinner party that you might have one day that people can come to.
Russian dolls, snow globes, trolls from when I've been in Norway, the little troll things. So I've just got, I've got a Chairman Mao ashtray that I got in China. So like it's kind of like just purely tap, but the snow globes are, as I've come to get older, I realize are kind of like a significant, I talked about this in a show, but, I really wanted a snow globe when I was a kid and there's this thing called the hedonic treadmill, which, the idea that humans are on this hedonic treadmill, which sounds like a bit of gym equipment you want to avoid. But it's essentially what it is it's a kind of cycle where human beings are designed to sort of want a thing, really want a thing, sort of become obsessed with thing, get thing.
Don't want it anymore.
Get bored of thing, want new thing. So it's kind of like...
Oh my God, that's me with dating.
Same.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say, Jennifer Lopez and husbands. I mean, let's, you know.
Yeah.
So all of us, we all have a version of it. So
I love that.
So it's called the hedonic treadmill. And so for me, the snow globe was one of those. Actually, I didn't even get a chance to get bored with it. I wanted it for ages and ages and ages. And I think I'd been in like Pound Stretcher or somewhere with my mum, and I'd be like, I want, you know. And it makes it sound like I was denied. It was probably that I'd already had been bought something that week. But I built up this desire for a snow globe. I eventually got one for Christmas. I think I was about 6 or 7. And we were walking to go and see friends, and I fell over. I was so obsessed with my snow globe. I was staring at it, and shaking it as I was walking along. And I just didn't. I fell over.
You didn't smash it.
It smashed instantly, but I also like jammed a stone in my knee. And so to this day, I have this like crater sort of scar on my knee. That's like a sort of reminder of like, you know, try not to become so obsessed with something that it actually becomes dangerous. I still have snow globes everywhere now. I have a New York snow globe. I have a...
It worked the wrong way. It serves to remind you how much you love snow globes. It's like, that's how much I fucking love a snow globe. I'm scarred for life because of one, and I will love them for the rest of my life. Like, people have children, they're like, oh, I don't mind the stretch marks because, you know, they're a reminder of the child. That's your knee with snow globes. They're constantly marked now.
I'm like, yeah, I can get the best snow globe. So, like, people collect Fabergé eggs. I won't be that person. I will be the snow globe person. I'll get the most expensive version of the snow globe.
What's your have you got a favorite have you got a favorite snow globe?
There's a New York skyline one that my friend bought me, which is pretty spectacular. So that's probably
I'm gonna
my
think about
one.
You every time I see one, yeah, because I haven't thought about them for ages. And now there's... you're gonna become synonymous with snow globes for me now. I'll just yeah.
Again, it fits into this kind of idea in my brain. There's a whole world in there, and then you can change it. You can change the circumstance or the atmosphere of it and make it snow. Mm. And it just, there was something pretty, you know, when you're a kid, there's something pretty and fascinating about that. So then you get your own money and you get old enough. You're like, I'll buy all the snow globes I want. So that's why the tat shelf has kind of gone from being like, you know, 4 or 5 bits of crap to more and more.
But to your snow globe collection.
Yeah, he seems to be okay with it, so, you know.
It seems like it brings you joy, though. What's that thing about sparking joy? And it feels like if you love your stuff, then great. You're allowed to hoard as much as you want, surely.
Oh, yeah, as long as you don't end up like, what was the... Would you remember the show about hoarders? Was it Mr. Treebus? Do you remember?
I mean, I know there's a show.
There was a show and there was a guy... I think I'm making this up now. I don't think he was killed by his stuff, but I just remember being like, imagine just like all your snow globes falling on you and no one finds you for a few weeks. That's, don't do that.
Covered in liquid with little like figurines all over you.
Bits
and stuff.
Of snow.
But it'll be like, she died doing what she loved. At least, you know.
Oh, I feel like I want to look for a nice snow globe for you now.
I know, yeah.
I love when, you know, when people have a thing, I'm not articulating this very well, but like when people do collect things and that is like
it's nice
like
to
magnets.
Be able to buy things for people. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Well, you've got those people that you could spend so much money on them because there's loads of things you know they'd love.
Yeah.
And then some people you're like, oh, what do I do? Get them one of those red letter days off the early 2000s that they'll never use.
Yeah. Get them a bungee jump that they'll never use.
You do have, I have a cat. So then my mum did go through a phase of just buying cat related things every year, and I was like, I don't know what to do with this plate with a picture of a cat on it.
Yeah, I had that when I got Thierry, my French bulldog, and everyone just bought me a load of things with French, but and I was like, okay, it's not my whole personality. I do have a French bulldog. Yeah. Thank you very much, but please stop buying me things. Yeah, I don't need an oven mitt that's a French bulldog.
Yeah, yeah. Stick to the Beats 3 for 2 gift sets. Thanks.
It's hard, isn't it? I think sometimes it's hard to buy gifts for men. But I do think for women, I remember like sort of getting past 30 and it was like, you're over 30 and you don't have kids. Here's a picture of a cat in a shoe. Like people don't know what to put on your birthday card or like, or it's Prosecco and it's a high heel.
God.
Every single book during a certain period of time was like a high heel.
Yeah.
And then it went through like pink handcuffs. Like that kind of thing, like the
saucy
novels,
stuff.
The saucy. And now it's live, laugh, love, isn't it? And you know.
I feel like we're coming out the other end of Live, Laugh, Love now, do you?
I think it's like we've all embraced it ironically.
Yeah.
It's like a lot, like if we there's stuff that we say that we hated that now we've like used ironically, that now it's just part of our everyday, like saying hun and saying lol. And I feel like the live, laugh, love thing is a bit like, you know, I mean, have a nice time, live, laugh, love.
Yeah, so many things.
Oh, no, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say you do ironically and then they just become part of your vocabulary then.
Yeah, then it's not ironic anymore. You're just doing, I mean,
You're just another hun.
I always thought that that sort of Boris was aiming towards getting this, like, keep calm and carry on range of merchandising post-pandemic, like, hands, face, space. I think like, that's going to be on a tea towel or a mug in like 2 years, and I'm going to want to smash that mug.
Yeah, chilling, absolutely chilling.
Burn that tea towel.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because I think we've all got to that point where now, when like COVID comes up, it's like we all want to go, that didn't happen.
So that, yeah, unless you're ITV, apparently, and you're like, oh, let's put one of the main people that, like, loads of people died because of, let's put him on telly.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that's mad.
Hancock, yeah, I mean, it's baffling, isn't it?
Oh,
fucking mad. Utterly,
but, well, it would be less baffling if he didn't have constituents and a paid role.
Yeah.
Like you kind of see politicians who are no longer serving in roles, you know, that are like, I'm going on. But the fact that he is actually being paid.
Oh, it's outrageous.
It's outrageous.
That, you know, like, so it's, I did write a men she wrote over Matt Hank about.
Oh,
Matt Hank.
Can we please? This is my favourite thing.
I want to do a proper lead into this, though, because I know that there's people who listen to our podcast that will need a bit of an intro to this, right?
Men.
So we're utterly obsessed with this. So I was reading a book last year, and I was getting so sick of the descriptions of the female characters, and it was just, you know, it was little things like, because I love to read a trashy thriller, like I'll always have a fiction and a non-fiction on the go, and I like lots of different kinds of books, but I love just escaping in a thriller, right?
Yeah.
I was reading this book and I was like, fuck me, I'm like halfway through this and these descriptions of the women, and then it really, and I was just sort of like, oh, you know, her hair was like cascading over her breasts and whatever, and you're like, well, I mean, really?
Yeah.
The fuck? But then there was this scene, right, where this like woman's missing or whatever, and then this detective goes into this video shop because it's years ago. And it wasn't written years ago, but I think it was talking about when the person originally went missing kind of thing. And it was like late 90s or whatever. So go into a video shop and they talk about, and he talks about the woman working behind the desk the first time he goes in. And she's, if it was a character in a film, she'd have one or two lines. And he describes her as being fat and ugly and her hair was greasy and all of this like vivid description of this woman. And then when he goes back, it's not her anymore. It's a guy there. And he just says about the interaction with the guy. Again, one or two lines if it was in a film. Nothing about, I didn't know
his
weight.
About his appearance.
I didn't know what he looked like. I didn't know what his hair was like. I didn't. And I thought, fuck. And I'm like, it's not until you see them next to each other where you go, this just doesn't happen to the men. So, and anyway, this part of this book I'd tweeted, which was, I'd been summoned to the office of Laura Cantrell, sales manager, mid-40s, with the body of a 25-year-old, twice married, single for 4 years, brown hair, white teeth, very red lips. Then it goes, and then it's like this next bit of it, which was, I glanced to my left and there was a woman standing there, blue jacket, matching skirt, sensible shoes, a just-in-time badge pinned to her lapel. She had some 10 years on me, but not many. Mid-40s, I guessed, with black hair and dark brown eyes. Her corporate uniform wasn't sufficiently dowdy enough to hide what was still an impressive figure. And I thought, I threw the book across the room at this point. I thought, I'm fucking sick. And I went down to, like, there's this place, Griffin Books, lovely little bookshop. And I was like, right, I want to read a thriller. And she was like, oh, this one. I went, nothing by a man. I'm fucking sick of the fucking, like, I'm sick of them. I was like, if I have to, and like descriptions of young girls in really creepy ways. And like,
oh, like the one that I took on holiday. I think it's called The Holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, as like, as an actress, those casting breakdowns that you get, the amount of ones that we've all had that say in her 30s, but still attractive.
Well, that was my famous one, was I got one saying, she's in her 30s, but still attractive. And that was a two-line character description. She was one of the only women in it, and all the men had a paragraph.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, we've seen that for years, right?
But oh, God,
like...
continually repeated.
Oh, well, I should point you in the direction of, and we did do it as a show in Edinburgh, I think in 2016. But a friend of mine is a casting called Woe, and she posts all these breakdowns. So it was like, she's past her, like, it'd be like, past her prime, age 25 to 35.
Sick.
Like, it's stuff like that.
Sick.
And like, the fact that even being described as fucking play, prime. Like, you're a stake.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Like, how many years has this been aged? Is it seasoned? Also, like, attractive nun. Like stuff like
wow.
that. Like, kind of insane.
Yeah, because we know the nuns you got in your head are absolutely fucking hanging, so we better put attractive nun.
We
found like the sort of, you know, because it gets me in my gut, like it makes me so angry and so just on so many levels. And like I, as a comedy writer and whatever, like my way of processing my anger has always been finding humor, right? Just trying to find humor and stuff and trying to process it. And what you've done in terms of just flipping this with Men She Wrote is
it's a joy,
one of my favorite things ever. And when I tweeted that, I think it was somebody replied with your tweets to the one that I shared on Twitter saying like, this description is fucking hectic. I'm paraphrasing, but they replied saying, oh, Tiff Stevenson does this brilliantly. So we'd love you to talk a bit about it, maybe read a couple, treat our listeners to what you did.
Yeah, I mean, basically, so the casting call, that was sort of years ago. That was like one of the... We're used to seeing it constantly. And I think someone shared one that was like, she knew she'd got pregnant. It was a description of a womb by a man that was so insane that I was like, oh, God, this is like anatomically... I mean, if we look at... And a larger picture, if we look at all of it, and again, I discussed this in my last stand-up show, Mother. It's not in this one, actually. But the etymology of the word vagina.
Oh, my God, yes. Because so we didn't know this until we saw your tweet of your stand-up.
Yeah, so the etymology of the word vagina is it's Latin for sword sheath, which I think is, like, really indicative of how... Like, my first thing was, is I was always, like, kind of loved using the word vagina. And then I was like, oh, that... sword sheath, like, no wonder men feel entitled to be in there. That's where I put my dick so it doesn't get rusty. It goes in the sheath.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you are adjacent to a man. You don't exist as your own individual, autonomous...
And you protect him, essentially. Yes. Like, all of the levels that is operating on is so disturbing. It's like, oh, you're protecting them. And like you say, the entitlement to be in there. And the... Oh, my God. And the fact that you were existing for them, because no one's got a need for sword sheaths if there's no swords.
Yeah.
So it's like the implication of that we exist for
as
them.
As an accessory.
Comes into, you know, and as people that have dated men, you know, we do feel these levels of entitlement all the time. And that sort of like, well, you exist for me. And that sort of anger that men feel when it's like, if they don't find you attractive or the weight that they'd like, it just comes from because it's like, why does that bother you that women are showing their bodies looking like that? Or why does that bother you? It's like, oh, because you literally think we exist on this earth for you,
for your entertainment,
so we have
fun.
To look good for you. It's so sick.
Yeah, there's nothing more terrifying to some men, and I'm going to say not all men, to some men, than a woman who doesn't care if you want to fuck her.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she doesn't care, or she doesn't want to fuck you. So, not caring how you feel about my attractiveness is very threatening to some men.
Yeah.
And me kind of going, I don't find you attractive. I don't need to work with your energy on that level. I don't need anything from you sexually. Some men don't know how to kind of play that or cope with that. So I just thought it was indicative. And obviously we still use a lot of this Latin sort of language when we're describing body parts and everything else. And I'm like, yeah, I think like maybe we could come up with some new medical terms that don't, you know, that just sort of lean into it. So it just, it's kind of the big and small ways in which women as second class citizens, you know, how women exist as second class citizens. So it's, and writing within this. So I specified bad male authors because I knew that people, so I'd seen so many examples. I was like you, with exhausted with it. And then I find there's a point where you feel like you're shouting about stuff or pointing at an injustice or saying, oh, come on, guys. I mean, for fuck's sake. So I was like, I think if I subvert it, it's just funnier. That's what I like to try and do with my comedy a lot of the time. Because I'm like, I just, if it sounds like complaint, it's sort of failing. Whereas if I actually can just do the same thing, but flip it.
Yeah, you just hold a mirror up, right?
Hold, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it's a mirror and I literally just flip it. So I just do all of the things that people do to women in literature, but about men. And I was at, like, men would have no complaints about it. You know, I've had all of that sort of thing of like, and then someone messaged me the other day going,
it's not the
point,
though,
is
it?
Should only write someone that's their exact identity, and anything that moves away from that should be mocked. And I'm like, what a reach. There's nowhere that I've said that. Like, I'm presenting these things for you to look at, but people don't like seeing that. And actually, I say bad male authors, there's also, you know, Nobel winners that do it. Like, it's entrenched. There are phenomenal writers who are guilty of doing the weather is being told by the hardness of a woman's nipples.
Yeah.
That is why I started doing it. Again, like I say, like you, I think I found, like, the 50th example, and I was like, oh, what if I just wrote a man, you know, and then I came up with like the first tweet.
I'm buzzing about this.
Oh, the what?
You
what
please tell us you've got some to read, because I mean, we've got them saved here, but I'm guessing they're yours.
Yeah, so you'll deliver it far better.
Well, no, it's not for me to deliver, but as in, like, as in, we've got examples that we love, but like, I think we'd love you to read your favourite examples.
Sure,
so.
I will, like, I'll read you first the one that sort of, that was the sort of first one in the series. And then I just kept going. And I'm still going because there's so much of it to, there's so many tropes. And then realising that in the years over my comedy, I'd done a lot of like, kind of ones about like sort of Bond, the reverse. So I'm sort of doing a reverse Bond at the moment.
Love it. Like, love it. Like,
you've got a job for life with this.
Yeah.
We donate to a Patreon for these, didn't we?
Yes.
Audible.
I should get it on Audible. That's what I'm trying to
yeah,
make.
Yeah, do a novel.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to sort of make a book happen. I'm trying to do a couple of things. It's sort of frustrating because, well, yeah, I don't even know. That's a whole other conversation about how publishing and everything, but there's such an appetite for it.
Yeah. There's like two pre-orders here.
Is there something similar? Are there people doing something similar?
Not that I know of.
It's the same sort of thing as the Fergus Craig Detective Roger Le Carre, isn't it? So you just start with that, you know, Fergus Craig?
Yeah. Yes, I do know Fergus. Yeah.
So it'd be that kind of thing, but with this. So it's just going, okay, there's an idea. People love this. People find this funny. Let's create this character and write this as a whole book rather than just little excerpts, you know?
Yes, yeah. Well, and I think there's a toilet book to have of just the little like a Christmas gift. Someone was like, oh, I'd buy this. Someone else was like, I want a whole novel, and then I've written like a chapter of one of a different one because it spans genres and everything else. So there's a lot that we can play and do with it. But yeah, Patreon's probably a good way to go with it actually.
Little audios of them, little audibles. It'd be what a delight. anyway, give us a taster.
I'll read you the first one. He charged into the room, hurt testicles bouncing gaily.
It's my favourite.
Actually, and there should be a bit of a pause there, actually. If you're reading it correctly, it should be, he charged into the room, pert testicles. That's what I'm going for. So I've got to find what it is. If I'm doing it like a woman, something has to be pert. So it's testicles bouncing gaily. I saw a scar and wondered if he'd had a vasectomy. He opened up his plump lips, full of promise, but annoying words came out. Something about a football match. His penis looked sad, like it knew its best days were behind it. He was 30, long past his sexual peak. A four-pack left, the memory of a six-pack. I imagine lonely days doing tricep dips in his flat share. This is a one-time thing, not boyfriend material. I would hit this and quit. let me see what else have I got here.
Oh, my God, it's my favourite thing ever.
I love it so much.
Here we go. I saw a woman, Louise, standing next to him, running a finger along his collar. I was immediately filled with rage. I knew then I would have to fight her. The idea of her seeing his tender, nestled trouser treats made me furious. They were mine alone. She had to be destroyed. There's one that's kind of gone mad on Instagram. So let me find that one. He rolled out of bed half mast and put on a pair of He rolled out of bed half mast and put on a wafer thin pair of trunks. You could see the outline of his dick, like a mole rat in a straitjacket.
The mole rat.
He strode confidently to the window, nuts clacking like lusty castanets. He stared out, not a thought in his handsome little head. There's so many there. There's percussion. Oh. There's an animal trapped in a straitjacket. There's just the idea that he exists as this sexual object with no real thought or sustenance, which is the... That's almost my favourite line of it. Like, I like the comedy of Mole Rat in a Straitjacket, but not a thought in his handsome little head. So many women are written in literature.
Oh, my God.
Like, she's this beauty, but, like, there's nothing else to her. She's just this person to look at.
Oh, and that horrible, what's the term of, like, it's in casting breakdowns a lot. It's like, she was really attractive, but so unaware of it.
Oh, yes, God. She doesn't know.
Yeah.
She's too thick to even know how attractive she is. Yes. Who doesn't know they're fucking attractive as well? We're literally objectified, like, going to the corner shop. Like, we're constantly bombarded with how attractive men think we are or not, whether it's shouting something in the street or, like, going to a bar or do you want a drink or, you know, like... And then they still have the audacity, knowing that that's the world that they've created, to tell women that they don't know how attractive they are.
Or it's like, you're not allowed to be like, oh, I look all right. Do you know what I mean?
I'm trying to find the one. I think there's one where it's like, does he know how sexy he's being? It's probably nicer if he doesn't. Here we go. This isn't it, but we'll read this one. He sat opposite her on the tube daily. This was an invitation. When he picked up his copy of Shortlist, she would start a conversation. He was shy. She could tell by how he crossed his legs to shield his pocket potatoes. He licked a finger to turn a page. Filthy little shy slut.
It's so brilliant and funny and so tragic in the reverse, isn't it? That thing of...
It's amazing.
It's just so incredibly powerful and hilarious.
I just found one. Oh, where's this? Hold on, let's see. I'll do one or two more if you like. Hold on. Oh, where
please,
was...
I could listen to this.
Oh, God, I've got a Matt Hancock one in here as well. Here we go. His voice drifted in. Something about a promotion and maybe starting his own company. Stop! She screamed. I can't bear hearing about your silly man dreams. They're utterly pathetic. His face quivered. A single tear rolled down his cheek, provocatively. Let's fuck, she said.
Oh my God. Quick question. Has a man ever approached you? Have any male authors approached you? Like, let's say someone like Linwood Barclay and gone, oh, fuck me. I've never, what am I doing?
I didn't realise what I was doing.
Has any men, like, or male authors gone, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed?
No, I've had a few kind of going, this is pretty bang on. and funny, and then a few kind of getting very upset as if I was personally attacking them. You'd have to actually, if you look through the thread on Twitter, there are a few sort of responding, and then people go kind of going, it's, you can just say Stephen King. And I'm like, I have loads of Stephen King books and I love Stephen King. Mm. But I was like, oh yeah, actually he does it a bit. Like there's definitely,
yeah, there,
but I haven't had any sort of say, I think most of the ones that have like a good sense of humour that, you know, and also it's not the thing of like ever saying that you can't ever talk about finding someone attractive in literature or what it is about them. It's about when you do these kind of like 2D versions of a character that solely exist with that and nothing else. Like,
and the relentlessness of it. Like I was saying about the woman in the video shop. It's like, oh, you really needed to tell us you found her unattractive and overweight and had greasy hair.
And it's that thing,
like,
isn't
it's,
it? Like,
there's the flip side of it as well, where women are, you know what I mean? It's so insidious.
And it is that thing of like, of course you have to, like, you're building a world and you're building a visual. But it's like, I had a self-tape a couple of weeks ago, and I was saying to Bet, we went out, didn't we? And I was like, I think this was done well, or am I so like indoctrinated that it wasn't necessary? But it was one of the character in her description, whereas it might have said she's overweight, it just said she's self-conscious of her body after she became a mother.
Right.
So I was like, that's helpful for me, because it's kind of, it's not saying she was overweight or she's not attractive anymore. It was saying she feels self-conscious. So then I go, oh, right, okay, I know that I can do that. And I kind of said to Beth, I think that was really well done, because that information did help me. I need to know what she looks or how she feels.
And it's a shame
physically.
That it's so much is, it always has to be, and then you break that down further. So you go, yeah, that's a better way of saying that she's overweight. But at the same time, it's like, women can be very thin and self-conscious, so that doesn't tell you that she's overweight, because we're trained to be self-conscious, right? But it's the fact that you then go down the next level and you go, well, they're still not writing those things about men. You know, like, we're still not, still always has to be a thing. Always, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of truth to it, because I feel like I've been taught to be self-conscious about my body my whole life. So like it does exist in us, but it's just so fucked that it does so much.
Yeah, so much.
Well, a good example for that one. He kept quoting bits of a podcast at her as if she gave a shit about his opinions. She was staring at his blancmange-like bicep. If he put in a bit of work on those, he might be fuckable. Still, she thought, you don't look at the armrest while you're banging the chair. So that's, again, the other example
Amazing.
Of kind of going, if this person tried a bit harder, I might want to fuck them.
Yeah.
Which is how so many, that happens a lot of like, God, do you know you could be quite attractive? And you're like, I don't care if you want to fuck me. Please stop, you know.
Yeah.
I remember having a guy saying to me years ago, like, oh, you've got amazing tits. If you lost a bit of weight, you could do page 3. And
oh,
I was
thanks.
Like, wow. When I was about, like, 18, 19, I was like, wow, thank you so much.
Thank you for your unsolicited opinion on my breasts.
Well, also, I think, like, kind of in the breakdown of kind of going, she's self-conscious about having a baby, I think that's within the realm of kind of, like, I think maybe that isn't even an insidious one. I think if that's a plot point, if that is a story point of someone who's in postnatal depression and kind of going, oh, she's not, like, kind of dressing the way she normally dresses, or she doesn't feel like, you know, something about having a baby and your body being given, like, not your own, and it changing. So I feel like it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's like, where is the, however, if then you went to read the script and there was like nothing that was like had nothing to do with any of it, then you're like, oh, okay, then that is a way of you just
And how old
go,
are the children? Yeah, is it just a way of shaming women that they don't get their figures back, as it were?
Yeah.
Are the kids grown up now and you just want to shame women still for being, she's self-conscious about her body, she really could have snapped back into shape, but she hasn't, and
but
she's ashamed
of
it.
We have so much stuff heaped on us, and also sometimes it's freeing to be able to talk about, like, I kind of, like, I'm big on the body neutrality, because I think body positivity for, you know, for a long while is kind of like, there are days where I feel good about it, there are days where I feel bad about it, and what I want to aim to get to is it's not the most important thing. We're always going to feel a way, and I just think men are so unconscious of this stuff. There's a So here's a beautiful example. Sometimes when I talk about aging in my show, and in fact, this was a whole bit that I tried to get into this year's show, which I might when I take it on tour. So if you've heard it on,
which we can't wait, we're gonna come and
are
see
you
at Soho Theatre.
For the tour show, like where I've got a bit more time, I might talk about this, but sort of aging for men and women being, we're sort of talking the show about how fertility is one thing, you know, I'm in my 40s now, you know, people still ask me about babies, but they look at my womb like it's a car up on bricks, like the MOT is about to run out on it. But men hang on to their fertility to an insane degree, yeah. Which is why I think we should have a male contraceptive pill, because women only have one a year, and then there's a point where that stops. Mm. Whereas men can go into the hundreds.
They tried it. They tried it. They didn't they? And they
too
were all
many
like,
side effects.
"Oh, there's too many side effects."
Too
like,
many
yeah,
side
no
effects.
Shit.
Imagine
I've been
being,
on it since I was 16.
Being the sex that takes the experimental drugs for years. Like you know, there's side effects to the contraceptive pill for women. There's side effects to the coil. You know, yeah, I think with men with aging is men are so unaware of their aging body. So this is a friend of mine told me this story about working in a triple five-star sort of hotel in Vegas where they do these. If you've ever been, they have. We all work off a five-star system. I don't know why all of a sudden when you get to Vegas, they're like, well, we work on a triple five-star.
We want 15 stars.
15 stars, right? But she's been on reception working there for like 20 years. And in that 20 years, it's a lot of like CEOs, managers, directors that are coming in to the hotel, and they've been coming since their late 20s because men get to be CEOs and directors at that age, and we're all waiting for that in our 30s and 40s and beyond. But they're coming in from their 20s and they've been going there, and then some of them are like now in their 40s and their 50s. And they come down to reception desk with the same complaint. They'll come down and they go, ma'am, the toilet water is too high. Excuse me, ma'am, the toilet water is too high. And the toilet water has not, the level of the toilet has not changed over the 20 years that they've been coming to this hotel. But what has changed is their testicles.
Yeah.
That have dropped.
Because they dropped.
And so they're like dunking them in bog water.
Oh my God.
And coming down and complaining about the toilet water being too hot. Like, and what I love about that, that's how unaware men are of their aging bodies. What I love about that, there's not a moment that the first thought is it's me. It's like something's there's been a tear in the space-time continuum. Something's happened. The bog fairy's come in the night and she's topped up the water and that's why it's weird. They haven't gone, my body.
That's it. A beautiful way of articulating how much the world is made for them. So it's like they're just so unused to having to adjust to anything, and then also not having to, you know, criticize their bodies and interrogate what's happening to them as they're getting older, because they can still fuck people, they can still get people pregnant, they can still do then exactly
by age.
So it's like you can see then why the brain would struggle with that leap of like, oh, someone's, the toilet water's higher these days. It's like gone up, the cost of living and toilet water's gone up. it's wild. Like that book, Invisible Women, where I was reading that literally like slack jaw gaze on every page of like, you know, seatbelts and drugs and everything's made for men, everything. Like temperatures that are set in offices are like set to men's body temperatures. Like you really, and they don't know consciously
this
stuff.
No, this is the
stuff.
Thing.
But it's like, so then I get really angry if there's resistance when I'm like, oh, well, the world's made for you. You've never, you know, you're privileged. I'm not saying that you're wealthy. I'm just saying that you haven't been discriminated against because of your gender, your sexuality, your race. Whatever, the world, you know, as a man is made for you.
And this defensiveness.
It's even silly ones like going into the services and then going, the women's toilets are just always further away.
Always
and
further away.
Like less of them.
It's because we've got to walk more and be slimmer for them.
The seatbelt is one that I've personal, like I have a scar on my lip because last summer, we had a crash in our car. We weren't even going particularly
Oh, God.
particularly fast, and the impact wasn't on my side. In fact, my husband was driving at the time, and the airbags went off. And it's a Volvo, which is supposedly like of the highest standard of airbags and everything else. And it came out in the passenger side, and I was just bruised across my chest, like complete, because again, these are designed for men. So like boobs are hit. So I had like, you know, like for about 6 weeks, just like, you know, sort of black and blue and green across my chest. My lip was split because of the debris, like the, I think something, the plastic or something that came out of the airbag. So it just sort of lacerated my lip. So I just had it this kind of moment of like, and I was lucky because then I went to the hospital and then the plastic surgeon came down and stitched it. She was like, oh, it's on the vermilion border. So we've got to be really careful of your lip that, you know, that we do that. And, you know, now I'm sort of less bothered about it. I'm like,
can't see it. We can't see it.
No.
You can sort of see it there.
It's all right, yeah.
But it's, I'm sticking my tongue behind it to see it. but yes, so I was just like the bruising, my legs, my chest, you know, I was like, oh, this is just not designed. And his airbag went off as well. And he just walked away without a scratch.
Wow.
So I was like, that for me showed, like, I personally experienced the effect of things being designed for men, things being designed for women.
Yeah. And it is that thing, it's like when the, you know, the loveliest kind of, you know, friends of ours who, when you do kind of bring this stuff up, that they haven't had to think about, oh, like, God, yeah, that's fucked. It's like, it's mad. What is horrible is that, like, we talk a lot about this kind of the newest kind of wave of feminism and equality, is that there seems to be a real pushback against that now, but due to various reasons and the way that, you know, politics has been over the past few years. But that, just that defensiveness that you just go, just fucking listen to like the facts. It's not an attack. It's just, this is how, you know, this is how we've lived, and these are, we're not making this up. Like, we want to just like moan about male privilege. Just listen.
Yeah. And I think as well that the problem is that social media drives a lot of the conversation now, and so much of the nuance can be lost on there. So when you want to talk about important things like consent and stuff like that, and, you know, I have a stepson and he's, you know, going to be 16 in like a week's time. And so trying to have all these conversations and trying to be, you know, so, you know, we need to talk to teenage boys. We also need to talk to teenage girls. And again, I don't want to say too much about this because it is in the show, but we need to encourage, you know, teenage boys to seek enthusiastic consent. But we also need to talk to teenage girls about owning their pleasure and liking sex, like, and removing shame.
Yes.
Because shame is such a huge aspect, because the dance we've been taught forever is that, you know, in heterosexual relationships, is that the men pursue and the women say no, and we should say no a few times, because if we say yes straight away, what does that say about us? It means that we're sluts. It means that we like it. So therefore, it's completely contradictory socially. That's the kind of the dance. So that's, you know, women should say no a few times, then eventually say yes. So of course there are going to be men who are like, no, well, that's how you pursue.
Yeah, you pursue.
That's how
you do it. So you're persistent.
We need to unpack that conversation.
Both sides.
One of my favourite things is your conversation with, so because Beth nannied for 10 years and had a conversation with, was he 19 at the time?
Yeah, I think
just
so.
Pointing out to like a 19-year-old boy, kind of saying to him, how would you approach a girl in a bar?
Well, I didn't ask him. He said to me a scenario that had happened, and we just talked through it. And I was like, oh, what might have been a nicer approach might have been this. And we talked about why, you know, why not go up and go like, oh, you're really fit, to somebody. And what that does in our bodies is it makes us go, oh, I've got to make a really quick decision now. Do I fancy them back, or do I need to say thank you? Are they going to humiliate me if I don't respond in the way that they want? Am I going to have to maybe lie and say I'm with somebody if I'm not? I was like, we've got to figure out so much in our head if you instantly objectify us. So I was like, just have it. Connections are great, you know, and later on in the night when that, like you say, enthusiastic consent is there and it's reciprocated.
Then tell her she's really fit.
You can, of course, tell someone they're gorgeous and, you know, compliment them and whatever. But we want an authentic connection, and just give us an opportunity to see if we get on and we have a laugh at the bar.
It's like
whatever,
what you said to him. You were like saying, would you like a drink, or just do you come here often? Like, we all kind of take the piss out of it. But it's just, it's an opener that isn't. I find you sexually attractive, I want to fuck you. It's like, open with something like, oh, I really like your trainers. Oh, you know, have you been in this bar before? Say something that isn't immediately.
Bury the lead a little bit.
And he totally got it, right?
He was like, oh my God, of course. He was like, of course. And then I was writing on this sketch show at the time, and I wrote a sketch based on it, because we'd had that conversation. It was interesting, you know, and I did a Cinderella one, didn't I?
Yeah.
I did a few different fairy tales. I just used fairy tales as consent and sort of explored that idea in the Cinderella one. And he's like, well, what do you mean? Like, I've told you I think you're beautiful. What? And she's like, well, because... And then they sort of like unpick it, and he's like, oh, this is really tripping me out. And then she has to go, and it's like, at the end, it's like, right, where? And he's like, where do you live? And she's like, she's gone. And he's like, I'm just going to knock on every door now till I find you. And she's like, please don't do that. Like, definitely don't do that. And he's like, no, I do it all the time. It's really romantic. Mm-hmm. And just calling out that thing of just pursuing somebody and how we approach women, and that all those things are still there. It's like, you know, because it's all very well, back to the vagina etymology, the, like, well, I didn't know it meant that, and I'm not that, and it doesn't mean that I'm seeing it as putting my sword in your sheath.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, and that's okay. And of course you didn't know that, because we also didn't know that.
Didn't do Latin.
But what I think we have to acknowledge is that entitlement and what that's rooted in, where has that gone? What that's still there. That's run through.
And it's just that thing of when it gets really shut down, where, you know, that, like, when we were talking about an actor yesterday that I think had in an interview, like, made some comment of like, oh, I'd be scared to approach a woman in a bar now because I'd get accused of Me Too. And it's like, oh, don't be so thick.
Oh,
like,
no.
it's not that hard.
Henry Cavill?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And it was like, please don't do that. Like, it's so easy. And if a 19-year-old boy, you can say to them, this is why that is nicer, and they can go, oh, fuck, yeah, no, I get it. I didn't think about that. But, like, just... we need people to be open to going, oh, okay, I was either wrong about that, or I didn't think about that. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. We don't all know everything. Like, I struggle with, because obviously, like, I was a page three girl, and I think I, throughout my career, was like, we're so, because we, you know, the lies we tell ourselves or whatever, I was like, oh, no, this is really empowering. And then when I left that, I was like, I started looking at, you know, the issues that I had with that. And so all of these things that you don't have to have all the answers to, listen.
Yeah, and I think we have to make room for mistakes, and honest mistakes, and genuine. I think as a society now, we expect people to be like absolute vodka, you know, like what, 100% pure proof or whatever it is. And that's not the reality. People are going to make mistakes. It's harder now, especially for teenagers, because the social media is everywhere. So mistakes are documented and poured over in a way that they never used to be. That said, like, again, the nuance of conversations and you talking about compliments there, I have a bit of stand-up, which feel free to look up, anyone who's listening to look up, but it's on my... It's the difference between compliments and harassment, because the statement is, you can't even compliment a woman anymore. You know,
yes.
Post-meeting, you can't compliment a woman.
Yeah.
And I say, you can... You can say to any of us, you look like, you know, you look lovely. We might say thank you, but we owe you nothing.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. So no response. No, if you're expecting a compliment in return, that's a Ponzi scheme. Yeah. I don't want to be involved in this, right?
Yeah.
So don't
give
the compliment going, well,
also,
I need
to get
one back.
Also, don't feel you have to give the compliment even.
Yes,
it's nothing to do with you what I look like. And it's not for you.
Well, and
if we're having a chat and we're mates, or we get talking at the bar, like, and you want to go,
you
oh, that dress is great.
You
yeah, get off the no, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it shouldn't even be a thing that men are randomly complimenting women.
But I also kind of do this thing of like going, no one's banned it. You can still do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can still do it. But I might just be like, like you say, like kind of going, I'm confronted by, now I have to feel I have to respond. So if I just ignore you, then that's it. You've done the thing. So your ego needs to be able to go, oh, well, I said you look nice and this person did not, you know. And then I said, I think I said the caveat for that, of course, is like, if your compliment is shouted from the top of a building or out of a
movie. Oh, yeah.
Like if the Doppler effect applies to the compliment. Like, nice tits. You know, like that's harassment.
Yeah.
So it's in that kind of world of like people like to draw these lines of going, you can't do compliments anymore. Of course you can. Read
of
the
course
room.
You can. Learn and it's how intent, to, like,
read
right?
the room a little
yeah.
bit. You know.
And it's intent, like be more emotionally intelligent and know that the intent is like
and,
you know,
and just don't expect to get one in return or don't.
Yeah.
You're paying a compliment with like, the reason I'm doing this is because I want to get a phone number or she's going to be grateful or I'm going to get one back. Then the intention behind all of it, it's like giving a gift because you want to get one in return.
Exactly.
That guy going to me, but I've got a 5-bedroom house in Dagenham.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
I don't want to go out with you.
I was like,
yeah.
I still don't want to go out with you. So, oh, well, you wait. I'll take you out for dinner. You want to go out? He went, how do you know you don't want to go out with me?
Like, I don't fancy you.
Well, I just went, I don't want, for the record, I don't want to go out with anyone. I really like being single. He was like, you'll never have to work again in your life. I've got a 5-bedroom house in Dagenham.
He was
I'm
really
a nice
crying.
Bloke. I went, I might have thought
it's
you were nice 10 minutes ago. Yeah. Now you're literally ruining my
you're
night.
You're harassing me.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
But...
I've got a 5-bedroom house in Dagenham. I mean, obviously, I looked at my bank balance yesterday and thought, I wonder if he's still there.
Wonder if he's still in that pub.
Yeah.
Tiff, we could talk to you about this forever, but we're gonna have to talk about your new stand-up show.
Yeah,
before we then get on to Smashing Sundays. Like
we
could talk to you for hours.
Yes, we could. Well, yeah, so if we can do like a bit of a wrap-up on I think anyone who's listening to this is gonna be at your show anyway.
Yeah.
You've given us such a good taster, but if you just let us know like where to follow you, where the tour is, and just a nice like sum up of what we can expect. And then before we leave you and let you get back to your music boxes and puppets.
and also, actually, I can drop it in now before you do the edit, but I think we'll maybe take out the guy who was like, you can only write these characters exactly if you are this experience. Because I'm massively pro diversity and different voices and everything else. So if we can take that bit out, I think that might just be cleaner. I know you came in and addressed it and went, I have different voices in the room, but it's probably easier if we've
that's cool.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, great. That's
because,
fine.
Yeah, because I think he was trying to say that this is, you know, yeah, anyway.
There's a few different angles on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely, that can go. And we can send you the edit as well if you like.
Okay, great.
Let's just do a quick, where can people come see your tour? Because I think you've given such a measure of what you're about in this. You've done that. So, and then just tell us what your perfect Sunday is and we can let you get back to your puppets in your music box.
I will give you the tour dates. Also, I do get lots of men coming along to the tour. So I'm keen to point out, you know, like I live with a man and I have a stepson, so I care about it. So what I would like is just like the ease of these conversations and being able to have be a bit fun and playful around it. And I think comedy is a great way to do that. So with that in mind, come and see me on tour. I'm doing Belfast in, I think, March, but most of the dates are in May. There are more being added. So I'm in Bristol 6th of March at the Tobacco Factory, Cambridge the 7th at the Junction, Maidenhead on the 11th, Norden Farm, 12th Birmingham Glee Club, 14th Brighton Comedia, 17th Bath Rondo, 18th Oxford Glee, 19th and 20th I'm at the Soho Theatre in London. And those, the Saturdays already selling, like, you know, that might already be half sold. They do dynamic pricing. So if you're listening to this and going, oh, it's next year, the earlier you book, the cheaper it is. So if you leave it, it does get a bit more expensive. Manchester on the 26th, Newcastle on the 27th, and Glasgow on the 28th. And there are going to be some dates in Ireland and also Australia and America next year. But I'm waiting to piece all of that together. But if you just come and find me on Instagram or Twitter, depending on how much longer that lasts.
Yeah,
I'm about to have my verification taken away because I haven't paid $8 for it.
See, I think I think if you are verified, you keep it. Because my friend said this. She was like, are you going to pay to keep your tick? And I was like, I think if you're verified already, you keep it.
Oh, I saw something else. I saw something saying, I think they're not suppressing the tweets, but the tweets are like...
Oh, we're being buried.
Shadow banned. Or
yeah, shadow banned.
Like,
if you don't pay.
If you don't pay. I think... I could be wrong. I mean, I have the most followers on there, so I feel like that's you know.
And what's your handle on Instagram and Twitter?
Instagram is Tiff Stevenson Comic, and then Twitter is just Tiff Stevenson. I also have a website. It hasn't been updated since Brexit, so I'll try and do something about that. But that's tiffstevenson.co.uk. And there is a mailing list on there. So if you want to find out what the next phase of Men She Wrote is, which I think is a book of some kind.
Please.
And also possibly a TV, you know, script that we're trying to move it into. So if you want to see that. And I've got a film coming out next year that I'm acting in. I also wrote on Avenue 5, so watch that. That's on HBO at the moment.
Busy lady.
Second series. Yeah, busy. It's exciting. And it's only taken me to my 40s to get to be doing the kind of stuff I want to do in my career. So, you know.
I love this.
It's amazing. There's another kind of like, yeah, I'm happy.
It's not a decade to write off when to go storming into.
I'm a late bloomer. I got married in my 40s.
We're late bloomers, aren't we? That's why we love you.
Yeah.
Amazing. So just before we let you go, could you tell us what your perfect Sunday... Well, I mean, you went into it earlier with the charity shop, but how would you end your perfect Sunday evening and what track would you play?
So I would like to go around the charity shops in the day, as we've discussed. I like being indoors, making a nice meal. I would have a Sunday roast maybe when we were out. And then if I'd had a really nice roast while I was out, then I'd come back and maybe do a cheese and meat board in the evening with a cheeky glass of wine and then some cocktails. We're big into the making cocktails here. And I would probably get tucked into a series that we're watching. But just get a cozy, get a Netflix on. Because I'm not doing shows. So the weird thing is that my ideal... sort of nights often involve either having friends around or being indoors because my job is going out in the evening and entertaining.
Yeah.
So being surrounded by friends and family and people I love, and then like either we're cooking for them or having them round, and then we'd sit and watch a thing. And if we had guests, we'd probably play some board games. We've got a Scottish one called Stramash, which is quite a fun game. So we'll do something like that. And my favourite Sunday song. Now, I could pick bangers and there's so many tracks that I love. But there is one song which is almost like my... Because Sunday is a day of the week for me. I'm trying to get into this place of like... I've already gone before I said it. I shouldn't do that. I'm trying to acknowledge because I've got one life and I try to look at all the beautiful things that have happened in my week and have just a moment of being grateful for all the great things that I get to have and do. And everyone's going through stress and times are hard and everything else. And just a moment of on a Sunday of just feeling joy and gratitude is important to me. And there's this one song that when I put it on, if I'm going to meditate or I've been in countries around the world just playing this song, often if I'm near the sea or looking out at the ocean, and it's Sailing by Christopher Cross. And
I love it so much.
Such a beautiful song. And it just fills me up and I have this joy and wonder of being alive when I hear it. And so that for me, if I just need to get into that space, that's
the song. That's a great choice. Right, have you heard the NSYNC version?
Yeah.
Do you know NSYNC did a cover of Sailing? Yeah. Look it up.
I haven't heard that. Hilarious.
I wish we could afford PRS and we could go out on NSYNC, version of that. The amount of bloody like music gags that come into this and we can't use it because we're too poor.
How many seconds are you allowed to play?
I don't think we're allowed any.
No seconds. It's so sad.
So people will have to now line up Sailing by either Christopher Cross or NSYNC.
But I'm going to go, because that's a real, real hard sell on that track. And I'm like, I have to listen to that.
It's such a beautiful. I remember my dad played it when I was like, I think I was like 10. And I was just, it's one of those songs that you're like, I feel all the emotions. I love this song. Who's this?
I'll play it for you.
It's just a like you can you could be anywhere and you could be just bobbing in the Mediterranean. Yeah, it's gorgeous. On a boat, just listening to. It's also
great
about
choice. Creating,
like the lyrics in the song. Let me just get the lyrics to Sailing up here. And I'll probably listen to it as soon as this ends as well myself.
Yeah.
It's the canvas. It's about imagination and wind is right. You can find your joy and of innocence and find tranquility and the canvas can do miracles. It's about taking yourself to a place in your mind where you can just, that's what I like. It's about fantasizing, imagining, and beauty and all of your perfect things, and it's in the lyrics, but the song itself, the mood, what it evokes, and I love it.
Beautiful Sunday choice, Tiff. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've loved this. I could talk to you for hours.
Thanks for having me. Sorry if I talk too much.
It's the longest one we've ever done, but I have to say I'll edit this out. Probably the most enjoyable. It's been a joy to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for
we're gonna come and see you.
Yes,
at Soho
and come and hang out afterwards and have a cocktail.
Amazing.
We'll have a cocktail. I was going to say, I'll have a cocktail.
We'll buy you a cocktail.
Where are you? You're not in London, are you?
Yeah. In East London.
So Soho is the one.
It's the one.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right. Cheers.
Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
I loved that so much.
That was amazing.
All week through I'm on the town, but Sunday always gets me down. So come by Sunday, make it after 3:00.